Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Ben, how are you doing?
Morning, Ben.
So, it's Independence Day weekend. It's the birthday of America, and we thought we would talk about our favorite movies about America. And we could approach these, I think, from various directions. I don't know how you put together your list, but something that kind of, other than the holiday, kind of spurred it on for me was the other day, you and I and some other people were having a text conversation, and somebody mentioned that in our political moment right now, they're having trouble, you know, being patriotic or really being proud of their country. And it made me think a little bit, because I personally became a U.S. citizen a year ago, just about. So I'm new to this, not really. I've lived here my entire life, but I'm new to, you know, being an American citizen. So I've been thinking a lot about the country and where it's at and what it means and to be an American you know, what the legacy of the country is and where it may be going. So these are all things that are swirling through my mind. And then on Sunday morning, my wife put my daughter in like a red, white, and blue like themed outfit. And I was just talking to her about it. And I said, yeah, you're wearing a dress that is like the American flag. And she was like, what's America? And I was like, well, America is where we live. And like later that day, we had some neighbors that walked by, and she just like, my daughter looked at them and said, we live in America. And well, like, I got really uncomfortable. And it was this weird thing where I was like, the very word, you know, just, I don't know, just like there's a strange negative connotation in our culture. Like, the word America has become politicized, you know, it's become a polarizing word. And it's bizarre, you know, am I coming out of nowhere with that? Or is that something that you, obviously this exact situation didn't happen to you, but do you see where I'm coming from?
I do, just in that I think the wounds are still fresh for a lot of people from the 2016 election and just how divided the nation still is politically. But I think America itself and the idea of it is still a pretty universally beloved notion and relatively bipartisan issue for most people. I think that's something that they agree on a very basic level. So I don't know. I mean, you'd have to probably go a little further down the rabbit hole and get a little more specific about what you mean by how America itself is politicized. But I think most people on both sides of the aisle and in between are excited about July 4th and sort of celebrate it for the same reasons more often than not. Maybe after this election or after any election, the next July 4th might mean something to certain people for different reasons. But I don't know. It depends on, you know, where you, like you said, where you're coming from. And if my daughter, whenever that moment comes, she shouts, "We live in America," to people who are walking by, I don't necessarily think I'll get uneasy. I mean, why were you uneasy when she said that?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it didn't bother me that she said it. I thought it was hilarious. But just, and maybe, I don't know, they react. Maybe it was their reaction. They reacted with a little bit of like, they didn't react like this cute little girl just said something funny to them. So, I don't know. There was just something about it.
Did they take it as
like
a threat from the little girl?
I don't know. There was like a feeling of that or something. I don't know. But it was, yeah, it was just something where I was like, you know, I don't know how different people, I feel like different people would react differently to that, you know, to what, I don't know, at some point would have just been this innocent thing. I feel like now, I don't know, people could be potentially not threatened by the two-year-old, but, you know, I don't know, just made uncomfortable by something like that. I don't know, it's very complex, obviously, and maybe it's all in my head. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting jumping-off point to talk about. Well, how does America intersect with movies, and why are movies good for America? And for me, kind of how I kind of looked at my list is that thing that you were saying is, you know, finding the things that we all love and can agree on about this country and why the what makes this country a good thing, you know, why it's always been a good thing and why we should be thankful for it. So that's kind of the thing that ties all of mine together. And in doing so, it also, I like to think that these movies don't shy away from the negative or complex questions that we have about the country, which I think the fact that we can ask them and talk about them is one of the things that makes it good. So that's kind of all that to say, that's the angle that I'm taking from. And my, there's also a rah-rah nature to some of them too, that I can't ignore. And I think is a good thing again. So do you want to just start with our number five, or well, why don't you talk about how you came up with yours, and then hopefully yours is far less convoluted logic.
No, it's similar to yours. I mean, there is definitely the rah-rah nature, but I think that these are movies that sort of speak to the American experience, both good and bad. Like, I like movies that sort of put America and its values and whether or not it's living up to the standard it claims to be living up to under the microscope, especially when it comes to my number one, which is a movie that came out relatively recently, which I think asks really, really important questions about those values and whether or not we are sort of living up to America's reputation for that. And so I like movies that question it because I think it makes America better. I think that it's healthy to sort of like be introspective in terms of are we doing the right things? Are we as good of a country as we claim to be? I think more often than not, yes. For sure, I believe in America and its values, and I think that when it comes down to it, Americans tend to do the right thing. But America isn't perfect, like any other nation. But, I mean, so many people see America as this amazing ideal globally and want to come here. So I think that movies that tell the immigrant story are really important, and I'm interested to hear from your perspective, an immigrant who probably sees America much differently than I do, even though I think in many ways we had similar upbringings in terms of the movies we love and the movies we like now, but we come from different places, and we definitely did have different childhoods and maybe understandings of, especially from our parents' perspectives, in terms of what America means, why we're here, and what the right thing is, according to most Americans and otherwise. So there is that rah-rah sensibility. But I think, like I said, it's okay to sort of challenge that ideal and see where we're at right now.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you're making me regret my number one, but we'll get there with your number one. But I'll start with my number five. But the last thing I'll say is there had to be some American flags in the movie. So I didn't want to. That's just a way to say I didn't want to take a movie that was entirely metaphorically about America. You know, I mean, I think The Godfather, obviously, I believe in America is, I think, the first line in that movie. But it's not and it's obviously an immigrant movie, and it may be on your list, but I think it is one step too metaphorical. But maybe it's not. I don't know. Anyway, so all that to say, there were American flags in all of my picks, as far as I can remember. And my number five has a giant American flag in it, and it's called Patton, which is obviously a great Franklin Schaffner movie starring George C. Scott as George Patton. It's a World War II movie, but it's really just a character piece about this lunatic who is so in love with war and finds himself in a high-ranking position in you know, the most powerful military, one of the most powerful militaries in the world up to that point. There's a strange spiritual aspect to Patton and how he feels like he's reincarnated in a way when he goes on the battlefield. But there is an interesting dichotomy between, war, our fascination with it, the necessity of it in some ways, and then the balance between Patton and General Bradley, who is kind of more of a level-headed, I don't know, in a way, real American. You know, he's much more about the process and about the people and about the – he's not about personality. And I feel like that's – there is a obsession with personality in America and in American war that kind of becomes pervasive. And I feel like that the Carl Malden – Bradley, General Bradley character in that movie is kind of like the tempering effect of saying, like, you know, like, this isn't about you and your plan. This is about our overall mission, you know, and we have to work together about that. And it's not about you, you know, checking these things off your box to accomplish the things that you need to accomplish. But it's just a fascinating movie with incredible performances and amazing set pieces. And it's just it's a big, complex, epic, basically. So,
Pat, one of Alabama football coach Nick Saban's all-time favorite movies. Start
terrifying. Terrifying. I bet his favorite character in it isn't the Carl Malden character.
we'll make sure we find out at the next press conference. We'll ask him that specifically. Yeah, it's a great pick. I need to revisit Patton for sure. My number five, I did my best to avoid having the word America in any of my titles here on this list, but I couldn't avoid it. My number five is actually a couple of movies because they're just so similar, and they're my favorite movies of their kind. One's American Graffiti and one is Dazed and Confused, which I think speaks to not only sort of like the American high school experience, especially in small towns, in terms of the sort of friendships and different levels of groups that we sort of become accustomed to. I mean, in many ways, they're stereotypical in terms of, like, cool kids, nerds, blah, blah, blah. But I think for the most part, I think that's true for most high school movies, but I think for the most part in these two movies, they sort of shed those stereotypes and we sort of get a glimpse at what sort of the real-life experience and how we experienced it as high schoolers. And I know it's not the same. I mean, these movies are about specifically, with maybe an exception here and there, they're about sort of the small-town white kid experience through the eyes of George Lucas and through the eyes of Richard Linklater, respectively. But I think what's interesting is about most of us in America go to high school, and we go through that sort of same sort of trials and tribulations that most people, especially kids who go to public school, go through in this movie. And it's all about tomorrow for these kids and what are they going to do with their time. They know that the sort of the clock is running out in terms of life as they know it and what they're going to do with their futures and how tomorrow is so important and how they've got to sort of come to grips with what they've done so far and whether or not the future that everybody seems to want for them is what they want, and they're going to start having to make independent choices themselves. And so there's a whole lot of mystery surrounding what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. So I think that these two movies are brilliant in terms of that one last night to sort of party with your friends and sort of, again, come to grips with what it is you want to do. And you don't have to answer all of those questions tonight. You don't have to answer them all tomorrow, but it's about that moment approaching and you sort of figuring things out. And I think that speaks to sort of like the traditions that we go through as Americans. I think it sort of, in a way, speaks to the American experience.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, just American Graffiti, there's that, the metaphor of this, you know, should we, shouldn't we get into this conflict, which I think has been the American decision on numerous world conflicts. So,
yeah, you know, it's not. It's revealed explicitly later in the movie, but you sort of get that, you know, looking back at it and sort of like the time and place that it's in, the Vietnam War is like on the horizon, right? And
right.
Like you hear about it with like these postscripts for some of the characters. Like there's a character who burns his draft card. There's a character who goes to Vietnam. And it's interesting sort of like looking back in terms of like who those characters are and how they will survive not only in a Vietnam but in other aspects of America.
I mean, something that I think that those movies bring up that is, I think, uniquely American in a way and to a fault is this nostalgic yearning. I think that a lot of the great movies about America and a lot of our culture is kind of leans on is this painful feeling of looking back and wanting it to be like it was, even though it never was that way, you know, and building our present and future based on how we think the past was. So I think that in both of those movies, it's a very loving look back at a bygone time. You know, it'll never be that way again. And they capture that feeling so well. But I think just in a general sense, it's much more of an American experience. You know, you don't have, I don't know, I don't think people in France, I mean, speaking as somebody that's from Germany, when I go to visit Germany, you're surrounded by, like, you know, old castles and crumbling fortresses and stuff. And nobody talks about them or really thinks about them or really, you know, it's just part of the history. Nobody is thinking about, hey, let's make Germany like it used to be. Real bad example there, but I think you see my point. But I think my number four actually kind of speaks that well, because it's a movie that explicitly starts with a really great visualization of kind of peak Americana, and then goes through the rigors of breaking that down and suggesting that, you know, we broke it, that we maybe had it, but we, if we never did, we broke it and we can't put it back together. And that's Oliver Stone's JFK, which is a movie I love, just because in a strange way, even though it feels apocalyptic to the American dream in some ways, in other ways, it's very much a, there's something optimistic that, you know, there's this system that we can go through, and that, you know, even if true justice didn't come to light, from Oliver Stone's perspective, on that potentially fictional, account, it was still, you know, it was still an example of the American, justice process working its way out. And I feel like that's something that is important, and separates us, you know, that, our leaders and our officials can't just get away with anything. And we have the right to chase down leads and to bring stuff to light. And I think that, you know, there's a strong streak of patriotism in that Kevin Costner performance there. And I think overall, it's just a movie that is confounding, is frustrating, is hilarious in some ways, in the way that, you know, the Oliver Stone fever dream often is. But at the end of it, I always come away with a rich sense of history, not in a textbook sense, but in a, like, a, I don't know, there's an encouraging aspect of it, that if we just look at our history, and if we just use that history to ask the right questions now, things will be okay, and we'll keep going. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, for sure. And there might be a little more on that theme, not necessarily specifically with JFK, a little bit later, but that movie is just so rich in terms of, like, the content and the ideas that it's exploring, all the ones that you laid out there. And it's hard to really sort of, like, describe that movie in the sense of genre. Like, if somebody asked me what kind of movie is JFK, I wouldn't really know what to tell them for again, all the reasons that you said, but also it's kind of hard to define Oliver Stone. I think the first thing people want to say, well, it's conspiracy theory, but I think that's sort of, like, disingenuous when it comes to JFK itself, because you're right, it's a movie that for the most part, I believe, still believes in America and still believes in doing the right things. But I know that Oliver Stone has been under the microscope as of late in terms of his patriotism and how he feels about America. Maybe it's him being misinterpreted and misunderstood by people, because, you know, I think Oliver Stone in his movies have a strong love for country and maybe to a fault in some cases. But JFK is arguably his masterpiece. It might be my favorite Oliver Stone movie, and yeah, it's just it's it's super long, and it's got so much, so many moving parts, and so much, there's so much to take in there, but it seems like an annual watch, you know?
Yeah, it is so long, but it doesn't feel long, because the way that it's shot by Robert Richardson and edited is just so fluid and so beautiful, and there's so many things going on at any given time. You know, there's like six levels of hierarchy of information happening at a given time, and you're breathlessly trying to keep up.
So my number four is a movie that sort of takes a look at the uglier side of America through an ugly person, and it's Paul Thomas Anderson's There Will Be Blood. And this is a movie that is very loosely based on the Upton Sinclair book, Oil, which I have not read, and it might be a while before I get around to it on my list of things to read, but this is very much from the psyche of Paul Thomas Anderson, and a movie that, for many people, it sort of served as a rebirth for him as a filmmaker in terms of his establishing a very specific, his own very specific style. And the movie it takes a look, sort of like the portrait of a businessman, an American businessman, at the height of this oil boom, in this guy who himself says, "I have a competition in me." And that just very simple line, like he says, I want no one else to succeed. That very simple line is just sort of like the very basic definition of the American businessman in the world of capitalism. And in this movie, sort of like gets down to the bottom of what this very specific person, what his sort of goals are, what his motives are, what drives him personally, sort of like the root of it, which is very sad, and it tells a very sad story. And I don't know that necessarily Paul Thomas Anderson is saying that all businessmen who are this competitive are driven by very sad, they're motivated by very sad things and very traumatic things in their life and are just ugly people in general. But I think that he is saying that stuff exists, you know, and business can get ugly, and business people at their very nature want to reach those goals by any measures necessary, and they want to tear down their competition no matter who it is. And business is just an ugly game. And I think that speaks again to sort of like the American business experience and how a lot of people feel about it, and how it's not for everybody, obviously. And people like Daniel Plainview will tear you apart if you're not ready for it. If you're not ready to play that game, people out there will absolutely rip you to shreds. And you can be a competitive person and not be good enough. And so this movie is hard to watch for those reasons, but also, you know, it's beautiful because it tells it's a father-son story that I think plays out pretty beautifully between Daniel and his adopted son under very questionable circumstances and for very questionable reasons. H.W. is a really amazing character, and there's a point in the movie when he and his son become business competitors, and you see where that line is drawn, where oftentimes family and business do not mix. And it's again, it's very sad, but it's just a very real thing in this country and probably globally.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely on my honorable mentions. This is one of those that I'm thinking it feels like a little one step more metaphorical than my list is, so that's what kept it off. But you're totally right in terms of the depicting this kind of very American notion of capitalism. And I don't think it's any coincidence that, spoilers for the movie, but in the last scene of the movie, he brags about consuming, you know, he makes the metaphor of drinking the milkshake and consuming the goods of Eli, and then kills Eli, and then eats a steak. So he's like literally consuming. You know, he's not content to just crush his opposition. He needs to like consume what they have and basically consume them. There is a carnivorous aspect to that, and that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if gone unchecked is totally what I mean it's time and time again what we see in America, and there's plenty of other great movies that would speak to this as well, that just kind of American consumption capitalism bent that we often have.
Yeah, and it's about sort of going to this very frontier-like piece of America and bleeding it dry. You know, like bleeding dry its resources in making this beautiful piece of territory a very ugly place and very industrial place in terms of like their aesthetic value. And, but that's just, you know, if there's money to be made, you make it, you know, no matter what the consequences are in some cases and what that might mean to certain communities and sort of the promise that Daniel Plainview makes to those communities in terms of there'll be these flourishing economies. And he walks away from them as sort of uglier places. So, yeah.
And there's just the aspect of self-reliance. You know, it's like, how can you argue with this guy after that opening 15 minutes where it's not like he's coming upon these things by inheriting them, you know, or trusted to him. He is busting his ass and risking his life, you know, for these things. And that's often the argument that consumption poses, you know, is like, well, I do what I want. You know, I got myself here. And I feel like that the way that the film depicts that is that, yeah, he almost seems like a hero because he's able to pull himself through, you know, that incredible opening sequence of just wordless work and suffering and survival.
Yeah, and he's also a salesman, you know, and unfortunately, it's just a matter of understanding, again, his motivations, what his ulterior motives might be in terms of infiltrating this community, taking advantage of it, and then maybe running away. I mean, it's about these poor people who are being promised, again, a certain type of future, and they're definitely putting more money in his pocket than he's going to put in theirs. And that is an unfortunate theme that resonates in 2017.
Absolutely. So my number three is much more of a hopeful movie. It's hard for me to think about America without thinking about the space race and just our achievement of landing on the moon and ongoing space mission. Obviously, it's a global thing, but there is something uniquely American about it, I think, as well, the way that it links back to flight and our obsession with that. So my number three is Philip Kaufman's The Right Stuff, which is just a wonderful, sprawling, another long movie, kind of this mid-century love letter to, you know, the original test pilots that took us to space. There's so many great singular scenes and moments in this movie. I think one of them is when John Glenn mouths off to the president to defend his wife, is one of my, and Ed Harris as John Glenn in that movie is just phenomenal. Of course, you have Sam Shepard, I think, as Chuck Yeager. It's just a wonderful, at times intense, at times funny, at times melancholic movie about a group of people that were just focused on this one mission and carried it out and gave the country something to stand on and something to carry forward. And it's inspiring and telling and honest in turn. The Right Stuff is my number three.
You know, I'm surprised. For a minute, I thought you were going to name Apollo 13 there.
Yeah,
on your list.
Apollo 13 is a little too plot. You know, it's a little too much about that plot. But it is, it's definitely on my honorable mentions, and it almost made this list. But The Right Stuff definitely represents Apollo 13, which is also about, you know, problem solving and our heroes and bringing them home and how it's not about these monolithic figures, but it's about all of us pulling together and achieving something.
Yeah,
there's
a little more of an idealistic tone to Apollo 13 in terms of we're all going to band together and everything's going to be all right when we do. And I love Apollo 13, but it's interesting that how you describe The Right Stuff in terms of having its sort of melancholic tone, because I mean that's something that always permeates, even in the space race. It's as amazing as it was for the United States of America and what they gave the country, it took a toll on a lot of people to make that happen. And I think that movie finds that tone in a pretty amazing way. And that movie, just like from a technical standpoint, is a marvel.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my number three is one of those movies that tells the immigrant story, and it's a great one. It's the last one I saw, and it's the last great one that I loved, and it's Brooklyn from 2015. John Crowley's story about the Irish immigrant, the young lady who moves from Ireland to America and has a really horrible case of homesickness in terms of wanting home, wishing she was with her family. She's alone in a gigantic country with millions of people, especially and specifically in New York City. She has no idea what the future holds for her. And when she's about ready to sort of cave and give up on it, something happens that keeps her there and that sort of helps to make this new place her home. And look, like Brooklyn, I love Brooklyn. Like, I think it's just sumptuously made. It's just a really wonderful, winning, crowd-pleasing story where I think people might argue that it's not exactly the most realistic immigrant experience in terms of the struggle that comes with it. Like, just being homesick would be an ideal immigrant experience, especially at this point during the Great Depression. That would be great. I mean, this is a girl who has opportunities at every step, in that she's got a great place to live. She's hooked up with a really solid job. She falls in love. She has options at home if she wants to go home. So again, it doesn't really necessarily speak to the immigrant's struggle, and it's certainly not anything that I went through, but I just think that this movie has such care for its characters and has such care for the people who do go through those struggles, because you do see characters like that from the point of view from this girl who begins to understand that she doesn't have it as bad as other people do who are in a similar situation as her, and she has genuine appreciation for that and reverence for that. And I think that this movie is just full of reverence, so that gives you the sort of ticket to root for her and sort of the freedom to really pull for this movie and like it when good things happen to her. So I think Brooklyn has so much going for it, and it's a movie that I have and will continue to recommend to just about everybody. I mean, I think that this is a movie that everybody can love.
Yeah, and I mean, the central romance of that movie is kind of a nice little picture of, you know, the cornerstone of America, which is, you know, immigrants from different places combining to create a family, you know, to couple together to build something new. So yeah, what a great pick. I wasn't expecting that one to pop up. My number two is the movie that I cite most often in talking to people about America and my citizenship and what I love about the country and what I think gets right about the country. It's a movie I think you and I have talked about a number of times. You may be talking about it briefly as well in a little bit, but it's Steven Spielberg's Bridge of Spies, which has so many memorable moments and incredible just examples of American ideas explained and laid out, and a picture of what makes us great. You know, this fair approach to justice and to acceptance and to transparency is just inspiring to me. I mean, this is the movie that shows me the America that I want to live in, even when I don't get it. So yeah, but also for me, it represents this string of movies about America that Steven Spielberg has made. I feel like this is kind of defining this later stage of his career. He's obviously making the Pentagon Papers movie this year as well, so he'll have another one in that canon. But just this, along with Saving Private Ryan and Lincoln, and it's in its own strange way Munich, but also reaching way back to Sugarland Express and Jaws. I feel like this guy, he loves this country, and he must depict it in a way that shows its warts, yes, but also its virtues. And Bridge of Spies is just the latest in some ways, in terms of what it goes for, the greatest, of those kinds of movies?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to switch. This was initially my number one, but I'm going to switch it to here my number two just so we can keep talking about it for a minute and we don't have to go back to it. So Bridge of Spies is my number one because it's just so fresh in my mind. And this actually came out the same year as Brooklyn, which it's amazing that I've got a couple of movies from 2015 on here. But for every single reason that you mentioned, you're exactly right. This is it's weird how, like, one way I would describe this is like the U.S. Constitution, the movie, you know,
yes,
and
yeah.
that doesn't sound exciting, but this movie is a thriller. It's a spy thriller. And it's amazing how it sort of disguises all of these ideals and themes with sort of the spy thriller genre. And at every single turn, this movie is making statements for why Americans have sworn to do the right thing, why this country is built on doing the right thing, and why it must continue to do that, even when our instincts and our sort of emotions don't want to let us do that. We have these rules, the U.S. Constitution, we have these things in place to sort of make sure that we do the right thing. And our law ensures that the country will give everybody a fair shake. And that's even in the midst of the Cold War, even in the midst of any sort of war. And really, like, this movie, for me, speaks to so much that is happening today. And this is one that I wish that schools across the country would just absolutely show year-round, you know, because it's an important lesson to teach young people. It's an important lesson to teach adults, you know. I hope that this movie did fairly well, and it actually came out at a time when I don't think people expected that the movie would resonate as much as it is and has continued to for me personally. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Steven Spielberg, like, these themes are riddled throughout his filmography, but never better than in Bridge of Spies. And I wanted to try to limit as much as I could on my list the number of movies that Tom Hanks starred in, because he's made so many movies that speak to those ideas. And what's so great about Bridge of Spies is that after all Tom Hanks and even Spielberg had accomplished in their respective careers, Hanks gives what I think is a top five career best performance in this. I mean, this is like a movie in a performance in a role that is absolutely exquisitely tailor-made for Tom Hanks' sensibilities. It's like if this movie had come out in the 90s and Tom Hanks was booming the way that he was, maybe it would have registered with people a little more than it did. Not to say that it didn't completely, because, you know, it was a modest hit, but man, if ever there was a movie for Tom Hanks, this is it. And I think people who say that they love Hanks and in his career and his performances, I think a lot of those people didn't necessarily give Bridge of Spies a fair shake or even see it at all. And I would implore them to see it for all of those reasons. So Bridge of Spies, it's amazing. It's a movie I think about constantly, especially in the political climate that we live in 2017. I think that this movie speaks to tolerance and acceptance in the country in general and the Constitution and sort of a lot of the storylines, the narratives out there, and a lot of the conflicts and challenges that people are reading about on Twitter or in the news in general. Bridge of Spies speaks to so much of that, and I think people should watch it immediately.
Absolutely, and it speaks so well to the, you know, I think that there's this the very American notion of revolution is, you know, that hey, you know, it's all about the people and it's all about us taking the power back, and that emotion and that individualistic zeal oftentimes overrides, you know, the next step, which is, you know, organize and make rules and make agreements and empathize, you know? And I feel like there's this wonderful victory in this movie of logic, reason, and compromise over mob rule and fear. And I think that those two things, that is, like you said, such a prescient thing right now, but just in general, it's a very American thing. We're in this constant tension between, you know, letting our emotions get the best of us, you know, whether it's chasing terrorists or jumping into conflicts that aren't the best for us, or bailing banks out or whatever. You know, it's this, we're a very emotional, volatile country. And
You know, we have a system for that. You know, we have this system of hey, if this happens, you know, do this or split the decision up amongst these people. And this is a movie, like you said, it's the way we're talking about it makes it sound like this boring lecture or something like that. But no, it's also very entertaining, funny, exciting spy thriller with amazing performances, amazing cinematography, and everything else. So.
Yep, and, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we have these things in place, and as Americans, we often want to, like, depend on the people who have been appointed to or hired or elected or whatever to enforce those things, and this movie shows that we can't always do that because there are characters in high-ranking positions who interact with the Tom Hanks character who basically implore him to basically ignore aspects of our justice system, ignore aspects of our Constitution, because it meets our immediate needs and in what will satisfy us in the midst of war, when that is clearly and very explicitly the wrong thing to do. So you have to depend on people who actually believe in those things, and you have to hope that there are people who also have those ideals who will enforce the law that protects those ideas.
Yep. Well, so those were our number ones. So let's get to the only right answer. You can throw away the whole list. I feel like we're probably in the same direction here. Those were our fake lists, and this is the only list that really matters from now on, right? So my number one is just as a representative. It's Rocky IV. Do you have a Rocky movie as your number one?
Well, I thought we were just going to start fresh and just rank Rocky movies at this point. But no, actually, mine's not a Rocky movie, but go ahead.
No. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, I take back that rant because I figured that was a sure thing. So mine's Rocky IV, which is not my favorite Rocky movie. It's not even my favorite movie on this list, but just in terms of when I think about America, the Rocky series just immediately comes to mind. I don't know why exactly, but it's definitely an American story of self-reliance, but also of simplicity, you know, of there's a need for independence, and then there's a rise to the top, there's a fall from grace, and then there's, you know, redemption. And I feel like that's such an American thing, and he's such an American character. And then of course Rocky IV in particular is just this really fun, in a way, I mean, it's high stakes because the robot Russian boxer kills people, but it's low stakes in terms of that we can root for America and not be rooting for, you know, the murder of innocent people in a different country. So there's like this nice analog to, American and foreign conflicts, but there's also the fantastic just design of everything, the feeling of everything. It's just very, I was born in the 80s, you know, it's the best things about Reagan's America, which I think at times is also a strange high point, you know, again, at least for a white kid that grew up in the 80s. So this isn't maybe the most representative movie about America, but I feel like it's the most rah-rah America is awesome movie that I can watch without a tinge of guilt. And it ends with this pretty fantastic little speech about compromise and empathy and understanding and changing and apologizing, which is just, you know, the frosting on top. So yeah, so Rocky IV is a movie that any Rocky movie really is a movie that I feel like watching every 4th of July.
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny because how this tops your list here ends it, because it's like, in the end, we as Americans just can't really help ourselves in terms of our just glowing patriotism and how we love the symbolism of bald eagles and American flags and machine guns and cheeseburgers and flames and fireworks, you know, like that stuff. We all just absolutely love it, and that's something we can all agree on, and I think the Rocky movies are something we can all agree on, especially Rocky IV. I think it's interesting though, like going back and looking at it, what do you think of the notion sort of in Rocky IV as America as the underdog? in that movie, because Rocky is very clearly the underdog, because like you said, there's a cyborg Russian super boxer who has already killed an aspect of America that we love, and are we about to sacrifice the other in Rocky Balboa, or can he possibly save the day?
I think it's America's underdog thing in a very uniquely American way, where we craft narratives where the biggest superpower in world history is somehow the underdog. You know, we're not, you know, like Rocky's not. Rocky's going to win
right.
in this kind of movie. Rocky may not win in Rocky 2 or Rocky 1. I mean, I guess Rocky 1 really, but much of Rocky 2 is spent losing. But we know basically after Rocky 2, we know that in the end he's going to come out okay. I think that it's that kind of false dichotomy that we love to present to the world of saying like, hey, we work hard, we're swinging from the bottom. It's like, well, yeah, but you have, you know, decades and generations of massive wealth behind you to support this military power and all these other economic powers that you wield. So no, you're not the little guy. It's fine. You were in like the 1700s, and then you stopped.
Yeah, okay, I buy all that, and I'm willing to change that to my number one, but just because we're here, I want to talk about this other movie. In this movie, just every other day, its importance just keeps getting reinforced.
Wow, okay, I just want to let you know that I'm wrapped, and I'm, like, really anxious to figure out what this movie is. So, I just want to raise the tension.
Well, you've been checking Twitter pretty nonstop for the past year, I'm sure, and I think the last few months have again reinforced why this movie and why this moment in American history was so important, and why we're sort of seeing not necessarily a rebirth, but we're seeing a lot of parallels in terms of what makes the American press as important as it is. And we've talked a lot about accountability in this country and why accountability means so much to our ideals and our government, our everything. And it's what makes America America, because we hold ourselves accountable through law. And in many ways, we hold it through press. And unfortunately, we're seeing an attack on that idea and those ideals in terms of the First Amendment, in terms of the freedom of the press, in terms of the way the press works and its importance in a really convoluted version of sort of the worldwide press, or really the press throughout the country, and what it means to us, how we get it, whether or not people respect the institution of it as much as they once did, certainly as much as they did in 1976 when this movie came out. All the President's Men is one of those annual watches for me. And you mentioned Fall from Grace earlier. Everybody is very well aware of Richard Nixon's presidency and what happened there. But this movie, you know, as somebody who works for a news company and somebody who has spent much of their life as a journalist and, you know, not necessarily working in political journalism or investigative journalism, this movie still gives me like a supercharge every time I watch it, because it's watching what people in their position, these two reporters and really the greater Washington Post staff, what they would do, not only in the face of adversity, but when they're given information that might compromise the government and like might compromise the people who are, you know, the America has elected to lead the country. And I guess it sort of asks the question, it asks many questions, but one of the questions is like, well, what would you do? It asks journalists this question, what would you do if you were given this information? I think for the most part, journalists would jump on it and they would pursue it. They would investigate it. They would report it. They would do the right thing. If something illegal was happening, no matter what level it's coming from, if it's wrong, you should report it. And I think that there are some people who would hesitate at that because of the powers on the other end of that and what that could mean for your career, what it could mean for your future, that kind of thing. And that's what makes this movie and that's what makes that moment in time so important. that people were doing their jobs because other people weren't doing theirs. And nobody wants their government to fail them. Nobody wants their government to be unethical, to do illegal things. They don't want that. They want everybody to do the right thing. And they should also want the press to report on it if bad things are happening, if shady practices are happening, even at the highest level of government. So that's the idea, is that the right thing is being done here. And this speaks to what we've already said about Bridges Spies, that idea of accountability. And regardless of that, this movie just operates as an amazing political and journalistic thriller. Like, this movie is just so airtight. The script is amazing, an Oscar-winning script. The performances from Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman as Woodward and Bernstein are fantastic. Jason Robards as Ben Bradley, the editor of the Washington Post. There are amazing character actors like Martin Balsam and Jack Warden throughout this movie that just make it that much better. Gordon Willis shot it. I mean, if we're just talking strictly from a technical and filmmaking standpoint, Alan J. Pakula and his amazing crew crafted an amazing movie. It's one of those movies from 1976 that people whine about not winning Best Picture because Rocky did. You get that, and Network, and Taxi Driver. I don't care. I love Rocky. I'm good with it winning Best Picture. I'm just celebrating the fact that so many great movies came out during that one year, including All the President's Men, which, again, it's an annual watch. It's an amazing piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed that it wasn't even on my honorable mentions. And, yeah, as soon as you start talking about it, it came to mind. Yeah, what a great movie. I really need to revisit it. And, yeah, again, just the presciency of it has to be noted. What a great film. And I feel like it could have used a sequel where they punch cyborg Russians. But, you know, maybe we still may get it. You know, Hoffman and Redford are still around. There's such a great mixture of movies that we mentioned. Do you have a second to go through some honorable mentions?
Yeah, you mentioned a few, but we've talked about a couple. Apollo 13 is definitely on that list. What was the other Tom Hanks movie that I was thinking that wouldn't be my? Saving Private Ryan for sure. And you know, you could name a few war movies. I did my best to avoid war movies for one reason or another on this list, even though I think, you know, plenty of war movies speak to American values and celebrate the country. But also, again, you know, like you sort of mentioned with Steven Spielberg's work, it shows the warts of the country through showing its virtues and vice versa. You know, so those are things that we have to address, have to explore, and have to really understand as Americans. And luckily, there are filmmakers and films that will help us along. So, yeah, I think that there are a lot of great Spike Lee in a lot of his early work.
Yeah, I was going to say Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, spoke to the American experience for sure. I mean, I think Do the Right Thing is probably the go-to pick there. But, I mean, even a movie like Malcolm X said a lot about America in that time and place. Really, really good movie. And you should go through yours while I'm trying to figure out the rest of mine. Oh, another great immigrant's tale, Coming to America, is a really like incredibly funny movie. But what makes that movie, I think, unique is the lead characters who were born into wealth and in power. They come to America as immigrants, and they choose to, at least one of the characters chooses to try to live the traditional immigrant's experience in terms of living in squalor and not using his wealth to his advantage as he makes his migration to the country. So I think that was an interesting sort of way to do that, and do that through an Eddie Murphy comedy, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yes, absolutely. That's a good pick. I mean, Malcolm X would probably be on my list if I had seen it, but it's on my shelf of shame this year, so I still need to check it out. Some of mine, Francis Ford Coppola in general. I mean, we mentioned Patton and briefly The Godfather, but in general, he's just a really good voice for America, I feel like he's got an Oliver Stone-esque perspective in terms of being able to talk about the good and the bad. Tucker, A Man in His Dream is probably on my honorable mentions, and obviously Apocalypse Now and The Godfather as well. You mentioned Network earlier. I think Network is a pretty great movie about America and kind of a more cynical look at media and journalism. The other Rocky movies, obviously, Rocky III is a favorite of mine. I mentioned that Spielberg run. I think the Spielberg movies, the most about America, or Circleland Express, Jaws, Saving Private Ryan, Lincoln, and Bridge of Spies, like I mentioned. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is an obvious pick, but I think it's also a great one. It's one that I watched in my U.S. government class in high school, and it has stuck with me since then. And I feel like between Bridge of Spies and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I think those two movies should be, like, blasted on big screens in Washington, D.C. and in our state capitals, like, 24/7, just to kind of ground everybody and remind us of why we're all here. Gangs of New York, I think, is an underrated Martin Scorsese movie and a really good movie about just the ugly side of early, you know, America. Born on the 4th of July is another Oliver Stone pick. The Iron Giant, I think, is an interesting movie about America. If you look at the Iron Giant himself as this kind of military superpower looking for a conscience. Citizen Kane is a There Will Be Blood-esque look at this kind of monolithic figure and how he stands in for America. And then finally, Captain America Civil War, I think, is a really good recent look at how we deal with what we've done, you know, what our conscience does and how we deal with mistakes that the country has made. And once we have conflict within ourselves, how we deal with that conflict. And potentially what our enemies want from us when they divide us and what that does for them. So I think that from various perspectives, all three Captain America movies, but especially Captain America Civil War, I think, do a really good job of painting this interesting picture of America as superpower. So that's my
interesting
huge list.
Yeah, I think I would go First Avenger if I picked any of those in terms of movies that, yeah, I think you pick Civil War for a great reason, because that theme is really important and explores it in an interesting way. And via blockbuster popcorn movie, a couple of other, you mentioned, we've since mentioned 1976, and you mentioned Scorsese, but Taxi Driver is just a great movie about America.
Sure.
It's about sort of that bubbling self-disgust, or that disgust with the worst parts of America, and telling that through the eyes of a character like Travis Bickle, and you know what that might mean to people will have a different point of view in terms of, you know, what that means, what how that might reflect America. But that movie says a lot of really interesting and important things. And lastly, I don't know if you wanted to mention Michael Bay's Transformers movie, because you're such a big fan, but lastly, just a movie that I could probably lump in with the coming of age movies I mentioned before, like Dazed and Confused and American Graffiti. America is baseball too, you know, and
yeah.
The Bad News Bears is a really important movie to me personally, because I mean, so many young people, I don't know if that's still the case now, it's been a long time since I've went through it, but so many young people play little league sports at one point or another. Little League Baseball in particular, and I certainly did. And, you know, I think it's interesting because it's about kids who are still very innocent, no matter how profane their language might be, even though I think that speaks to sort of like the household they were growing up in and what their parents are like. But it's about kids who start to begin to understand that they can't depend on every single adult in their lives, you know, and sort of coming to grips with that reality, is that at some point, like, they're going to have to take care of themselves when they were told that this adult would take care of them, and they fall through. It doesn't work out as well, and they have to become independent at an early age. That's not a theme of that movie that it harps on, certainly, because it's a family comedy, but that movie has a little more darkness than I think a lot of people realize. And it's wonderful, and it's one of the great American movies, and it's very important to me. So people should watch that again.
Another one from 2015 that I failed to mention, Joy, I think is a really good kind of, you know, up from nothing, pulling yourself up by the bootstraps and then responsibly wielding that power movie. And in general, I think David O. Russell has had a good little string. I would throw American Hustle on that list too. I think also Three Kings, which obviously isn't recent, but I think he's more of one of our more vibrant voices in terms of looking at our culture and looking at what makes it what it is.
Good stuff.
Awesome. Well, so much good stuff here, but I know what I'm going to do for the next day. I'm going to eat hot dogs, drink beer, and watch Rocky.
Sounds good to me.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.